So we're on Daf Chav Tes Amud Beis. Last thing we learned was Kfar Horizokin, that Rabbi Shmuel made a psak in which he was mechayev the Yorshin to pay half the amount. Now what's done is done. So we're up to Hoda Bifnei Shnayim. And this is in the middle of the Daf. Hodu b'fnei shnayim. It's about above Tosfos Divrei Maskil Mar Baravashi, about three lines up. So we were talking about hoda, which means that there was a confession on the part of the lova that he owes the money, or whatever the tviya was. And we said that in a case of hoda, even if there were witnesses, the litigant has the right to claim Mishat Anibach, unless he designates the two Edim as his witnesses to testify in Bezdin that he admitted the Chov in their presence. So if he didn't say the words, Atem Edai, you are my Edim, then the Hodah is not binding. However, what happens, says the Gemara, Hod b'fnei shnayim v'kanu miyado. A kinyan sudar is always an absolute commitment. And we have a sugya in Baba Basra in the third perek, that any time two edim saw a kinyan that supported a particular commitment, then that kinyan sudar allows the Edim to write up a shtar.
So in this case we're saying he's not appointed, they were there, but he just said a kinyan.
Correct, as long as they made a kinyan. Now who made the kinyan? Either he made the kinyan together with the malva, or even without the malva, just the Edim. The Edim themselves could be kana liyado, and then the Gemara says kosvin. The Edim will write up a shtar, give that shtar over to the Malva. The Malva will use that as a proof against the Lova, which means two things. Number one, it means that the Lova cannot deny the Chov. Okay, that's number one. It means three things. Number two, the Lova cannot claim Parati, that he paid up, because the burden of proof is on him to prove that he paid up. And number three, that shtar will now generate Shibudin, such that if the Lova defaults and he cannot pay the Chov, the Malva has recourse to collect from the Lekuchos, from buyers. V'im Lav. However, if two things were missing. Number one, the Lova, when he made his admission, he did not instruct the Edim Atem Edai. Number two, there was no Kinyan, there was no Kinyan Sudar, and Kosvin. Then, the witnesses did not have a right to create a Shtar. Why? Because a shtar is a document that's created midas ha-mischayev. And in this case, the lova, who is mode, is the mischayev. He's the one who stands to lose as a result of the shtar. He has a right to say, well, I don't want to be mischayev for a shtar. The shtar really incarcerates me. It boxes me in. I won't be able to claim that I paid up. It'll generate shibudim. You never had the okay, the go-ahead from me to create the shtar.
But what is due to the Edim, every time if they are appointed Edim, have to write up a shtar?
No. They can only write up the shtar if one of two conditions are met. Either A, they were instructed by the mischayev to write the shtar. That's the yisod ha-yisodos of all shtaros. That shtar has to always be written midas ha-mischayev. There are exceptions to that rule, but they're very rare and far between. Or alternatively, if they were not instructed explicitly to write the shtar by the mischayev, the Edim write the shtar if there was a kinyan miyado. The kinyan miyado creates what's called a gemiras das shlema, and the premise is that once there was a kinyan, then anything that would strengthen that hischayvus, that commitment, or in this case the hodah, is assumed inherent in the Das HaMeschayev. In other words, even though there was no explicit instruction to the Eidim to write the Shtar, nevertheless, since it was a Kanu B'Yodo, the Kanu B'Yodo tacitly includes within it a commitment to write a Shtar.
So my question is, if you didn't tell it, if you did a Kinyan, do they have to write a Shtar, or they carry their wife? Because
Right. I don't know that they have to write a shtar, meaning under what obligation would you classify that? I don't know. Would it be a moral obligation of the haftal rech kamocha? I don't think the Eidim have any sort of monetary obligation. In general, let's say I ask you to write a shtar. I mean, do you have to write the shtar?
Yeah, if you ask me, then I
have to. You know, under what din? What do you mean you have to write the shtar? And if not, what? I'm going to sue you in a court of law. I'm going to throw you into jail. Well, it's a moral obligation.
What's making a difference to the hoda'ah, whether there's a shtar or not, if I've appointed you as AD?
What do you mean it won't make? I didn't follow what
I'm
you said.
I'm saying the end result.
Yeah.
Of the hoda'ah.
Yeah.
The minute you appoint him as AD, the Hoda is hal for everything from
correct, including writing a shtar.
So it doesn't matter.
Atam Eida.
There's no shtar, it's still the
right.
Same end result.
But again, when you ask me the question, under what obligation are the Eidim bound to write a shtar? I don't know. Maybe v'haftal rech kamocha, maybe it's a moral obligation. I don't think you could impose a monetary obligation such that they would have to pay the malve, you know, some sort of compensation because they didn't go ahead and write him a shtar. I don't know.
Doc,
we have a very long daf today. If you don't mind, again, I'm always here the whole day. I just want to see, and that's why we're starting so early. I hope the other chevra will come today. But we have on daf lamed one of the most exciting dafim in Shas, and I'm just eager to see if we can get to it. So bifnei shlosha v'lo kanu miyodim. Now the question is, if the litigant, in this case the lova, gathered together three witnesses. Now, why three witnesses? He only needs two witnesses. So Rav Amar Kosvin, in this case, why did he add the third witness? Apparently, he wants to delegate a Bezdin. And if a person comes into Bezdin and he says, I owe so-and-so money, then Bezdin has the right to go ahead and write a shtar. Okay, Tov, and that shtar will be a weapon in the hands of the Tzad Shekenegdo, of the Malva in this case. Rav Asi Omar Ein Kosvin. Rav Asi said, no, maybe perhaps he wanted to add an extra witness, and it was three witnesses, but he never intended this lover to gather together three as a Bezdin. So we have here a machlokus between Rav and Rav Asi. Do we assume that since the Lova made his admission in the presence of three, he was basically appointing them as a Bezdin, and Bezdin therefore has the rights to write a shtar? That's the nature of Bezdin. Or do we say no, that he really appointed them as witnesses, and they don't have the authority of a Bezdin? Havi Uvda, there was a case, V'choshle Rav Lahadra of Asi. And even though Rav himself seems to have assumed, again, there are a lot of different gersos here, if we have time we'll get into it, but he assumed that the third witness indicates that the litigant wanted to create a Bezdin. Nevertheless, he was worried about Rav Asi's opinion, Lahachmir, and he said, we're not going to write a shtar. Why? Because maybe it's only three Eidim, and he never appointed them as his aidim to write a shtar, therefore we don't assume necessarily that he was making a hodah b'fnei Bezdin. The Gemara continues now on this note. Omar of Adavar Ava ha'odisa, in the case of writing a shtar hodah, the law is the following. Zimnin kasvinon. Sometimes if there are three witnesses, they can write a shtar. a shtar against the lov on behalf of the malva, zinin lo kasvin, under certain conditions they are not allowed to write a shtar. And what's the difference? When do we say they can and when they can say we cannot? Knife v'yasve lo kasvinin. If the bezdin was there sitting together, then there's no indication that the lover was making his admission, submitting his admission in front of a bezdin. He really wanted to just submit his admission in front of Edim. There happened to be three gentlemen sitting there together, so he did so. When are the three individuals given permission to write a shtar? Knifinu, if the lova actively gathered the people together, ihu means the lova, the mischayev, kasvidon, then why did he gather three people together? And the answer is because he wanted them to be bezdin, and bezdin is authorized to write the shtar. Now, it could very well be that this sugya of Adavar Ava accepts the sheet of Rav that we had just above, or it could be no, that in the case of Rav, where he didn't actively gather together the three witnesses, then we don't assume they're bezdin. Rav Adavar Ava says that we can accept the sheet of Rav in the following scenario, where he, the mischayev, actively gathered together three people, and in doing so, then we accept Rav that the assumption is he did so in order to empower them as a bezdin. And then they could write the shtar Odisa. Rava Omar afilu knifinu ilokasvin. It's not sufficient that he, the lova, gathered together the three witnesses. That itself does not serve as proof positive that he appoints them as an aid, as a bezdin, empowering them to write a shtar adi omar, until he says lehu to these three individuals, quote, hevi olai dayone. You will be my judges. That is the critical moment when we make the transition from Edim, who are not allowed to write the shtar, to Dayonim, who are allowed to write the shtar. So in order to authorize these three individuals as Dayonim, it's not enough that he gathered them together, because once again, maybe he gathered together three Edim, he didn't need three Edim. Two would suffice, but just liyeter bitachon, for an extra strength, he made sure that there was a third witness. But if he appoints them with the words hevi olai dayoni, then the bezdin is granted, empowered, the authority to write up a shtar odisa. Mar bravashi omar, that even that's not enough. Afilu omar, quote, hevi olai dayoni, you be my judges. Nevertheless, lo kasvino, we still have doubts as to whether or not he wanted them to be a bezdin. Why? Adekavu duchta v'sholchi umezamnile lebeidina. We need, says Mar Bravashi, bezdin befall. What does that mean, bezdin befall? That the court has to act as a court. How do they act as a court? So there are two conditions that have to be met. Number one, we need what's called kfius makom. Bezdin has to be in a designated area. That's where they sit. That's called, in every shtar you write, b'moshav bezdin. And number two, how did bezdin involve themselves in this hodah actively? They subpoenaed the lov that appeared in front of court and asked him to repeat or to express verbally his admission in their presence. So again, Rava says all we need is a gili das. We only need circumstantial evidence that indicates that he, the lova, wants the three people to serve as a bezdin. Once that's so, he empowers them as a bezdin. Mar Bravashi goes a step further. He said, no, we need a chalushem bezdin. We need that this bezdin actually functions as a bezdin. If they're simply passive and they hear the admission, they have not yet become a bezdin. That transition point in which they now take on the status of a bezdin only is activated once they function, they serve as a bezdin. How do they actualize their status as a bezdin? Number one, they're kovei makom, and number two, they invite someone, in this case the Love, to appear in their presence in the Beis Din.
I said the halacha isn't like Rav Ashi.
I didn't get a chance to research that.
Because when we do a Beis Din Sefer HaTorah Nedarim, we don't do that. We just say
that's because HaTorah Nedarim is not a Beis Din. There's no requirement of a Beis Din for HaTorah Nedarim. HaTorah Nedarim is a tribunal of three people, but it's not a Beis Din. Now here, if you take a look in the note number 21, he says that a court is not empowered to impose its authority on a lova and write up a shtar odisa unless, number one, the lova came to an established court, that means there already was a kfiyas Beis Din, and then the Beis Din said, we need to summon this lova to Beis Din. At that point, that gives Beis Din the power to create a shtar. Now the reason for this, he says, is because we discussed a few minutes ago what is the power of a shtar, what's the discrepancy, what is the extra force and power of a shtar as opposed to just a hodah in front of Edim. So we discussed the fact that he won't be able to deny that he made a hodah. We discussed the fact that he won't be able to say he paid up this chov until he gets back the shtar. But more importantly, and probably fundamentally, is what's called shibudim. That a shtar has the power to create shibudim. Now, to create shibudim, we have to somehow notify the lekuchos. It's got to be public knowledge that indeed so-and-so owes a debt to so-and-so. Otherwise, the lekuchos don't know that he owes a debt. They went ahead naively and purchased the piece of karka. Why should that karka be confiscated from them when they had no clue that the seller was in fact a debtor who owed a debt? So we need the public nature of that debt in order to create a shivut. And the halacha says the following, that if a shtar is written up, it has what's called a kol, and we assume, based on this rumor, that the lekuchos are well aware and well warned in advance that they're buying a piece of karka that has on it a lien, a shibut. Now, in order to create that shtar, you need that public element. And Marav Rav Ashi says that there's no license to create a shtar unless you have that public element. When is that publicity? When is it considered a public act? That's when Beis Din, as such, as an established Beis Din, creates the shtar. That creates the publicity, the kol, that sets into motion a process of shibud. Again, these are all very deep, profound sugyas, and we're just touching on the tip of the iceberg. Now the Gemara goes on into a very interesting discussion about the difference between karka and metaltalin in the context of an admission. Why is this so? When a baldin admits in front of witnesses that this karka that he's sitting on belongs to so-and-so, it's not my karka, then automatically so-and-so becomes the possessor of the karka. Why? Because karka is in the possession, it's in the domain of its owner, no matter where the karka is. As opposed to metaltalin. In metaltalin, a person can only claim that he possesses the metaltalin if they're physically under his hand. That's called tachas yado. That's with regard to metaltalin. How much more so in the case of a chov, an abstract debt, that the Baal HaChov doesn't own the Chov, he can't even physically make a kinyan on the Chov, and the Shtar has to function in that capacity. But in the case of Karka, we have a special din. So the Gemara says the following, how does this kick in to our discussion about Hodah? Hodah b'metaltalin v'kanu miyado. In the case of an admission, where I say in front of witnesses, this object belongs to so-and-so. Imagine I have this Hungarian, beautiful, artistic vase, and I say it belongs to you. In such a case, kanu miyado, if the edim made a kinyan, then we say that any hodah that was supported by a kinyan sudar, is kosvin. That indicates the gemiras das, the willingness on the part of the modeh to write up a shtar. V'im lav, but in the absence of a kinyan, ein kosu, but b'mekarke, v'lo kanu miyado. My, what's the law in the case of mekarkin? Because in the case of karkos, even in the absence of kanu miyado, the hodah does everything that we needed to accomplish. From now on, as soon as the person admits this piece of real estate belongs to so-and-so, that so-and-so now has a chazaka, he has a rishus on the karka. The karka is in his rishus. There's no need to write a shtar in such a case. The shtar is totally unnecessary. It's only going to serve as an extra proof. And since the modeh, who admitted and confessed that this karka belongs to so-and-so, he realizes that the very second he says so, he's got to get out of the karka. Skedaddle, skedoodle, you know, he's out of there. And the karka is already in the possession of the bala karka. Therefore, he understands very well that his hodah is not just a statement, it's not just an admission, but it changes the halachic reality as far as this karka is concerned. He's already given bailus and chazaka and rishus over the karka to the person to whom he was modeh. And therefore, in such a case, we don't need a kinyan. And in such a case, his confession is a total confession that, as we said, changes the facts on the ground. Amemar is not happy with this. Amemar Omar Ein Kosvin. We cannot write a shtar even in the case of karka. So why did you ask this question? Meaning, my, you, Amemar was in a sense put aback. Why do you ask such a question? Karka is no different than anything else. Why? Because at the end of the day, if you go ahead and write a shtar, odaisa, and you give it over to the person to whom he was modeh as a weapon in his hand, he now has it in such a way that the modeh could never deny his hodah. So there's an extra power in the shtar. Mar Zucha Omar Kosvin, and yet Mar Zucha disagrees with Amemar, and he maintains that since immediately the karka reverts through this hodah back to its owner, and therefore the chazok of the muksok is meaningless, at that point there is a total confession which indicates that the modeh is removing any claim whatsoever that he possibly could come up with on this karka, and therefore we could write the shtar. Such an admission is so powerful that it includes within it inherently the ability of the Eidim to write the shtar. V'hilchus ha-kosvin, and we paskin like Mar Zucha. Again, Rabosa, I wish we had a lot more time to spend on that sugya, but within the framework of a daf yomi shir, I think that's going to have to do it for now. Ravina ikla l'damharia. I don't know if you were ever in Damharia. It's a very beautiful city. No, I have no idea. I've never been there. Anyway, Ravina came to this city. Amalei Rav Dimi bar Huna midahamya. So one of the local chachamim, his name is Rav Dimi, says to Ravina, mitaltale v'isnu be'enayu mai. Now that we paskin the halacha, like Mar Zutra, that if there was hodah on karka, even without kinyan, the Edom could write up a shtar. What's the deal in the case of metaltalin, but the metaltalin already isnu be'enayhu, which means that normally when we talk about metaltalin, we can refer to a chov. A chov is considered a debt, is considered metaltalin. So even when he admits the debt, I owe so-and-so money, that so-and-so did not come and possess that chov. There's no actual physical possession. But if, on the other hand, the modeh looks at a table, a physical object, a metaltalin, and he says, this belongs to so-and-so, then at that very moment, we could say that that plony now has a possession on the metaltalin. So again, even though metaltalin never has the exact same power as karka is always in the rishus of the bialim, no matter where it is. If I have a piece of real estate in Singapore, then it's mine. It's in my possession, even there. And that's not true for metaltel, but here in this case where he has metaltel in here, and he's moda that it belongs to so-and-so, automatically that so-and-so gains possession over the metaltel because it's physically here. My!
So can we doesn't have to be the very same coins that the person took from him.
Well, again, if it's the same coins, that's a sugya mesecht kedushin, which is called milvalotza nitna. And it could be that the lova, up until the point that he uses the money that he borrowed, it's considered as if the money is in the reshus of the malva. But I think the Gemara here is talking about not a loan, because a loan is milvalotza nitna, and it means that the malva doesn't own those coins, even if the lova hasn't spent them yet. Again, for that you have to see Gemara Kedushin Daf Mem Zayin, wherever the sugya is. But here we're talking about a table, a physical object that's concrete, and therefore immediately the tzad shekenegdo becomes the possessor of that object. Because if you admit that this table that you're holding on to is not yours, now he holds on to the table. He automatically takes possession of the table. And in that sense, metaltelin now becomes exactly like karka. Just like in karka, the hotel went one step further. It wasn't just a confession of a fact, but it was also a transferal of possession, of reshus. So too, we can have the same svara, the Gemara thinks, in metaltelin. Amalei Ravina respond to Avdimi, Kimakarkoi Dami, Enochinami, if the metaltelin is be'en, it's physically here in front of us, we can point to it, it's concrete, then the moda has already transferred possession over this physical object immediately with his hodah. That's the opinion of whom? Of Ravina. Ravashi disagrees. Kaven the Mechasru Gavina Lo. The Tzad Shekeneged, right, there's Shimon who admitted that this table belongs to Reuven. Reuven now comes along. He can't just take over the table and pull it out of Shimon's possession. You know, walk into his house and grab the table and run away with it. No. He needs what's called Gevina. In other words, he has to take recourse and go into Beis Din. And then in Beis Din, he's going to adduce evidence, he's going to bring the Edom into Beis Din, but it's not that he has automatic possession the very moment that there was Hodah in front of the two Edom, and therefore even if the Metaltelin on Be'en, they're right here in front of us, at the time that Reuven made his confession, or I forget the names already, that Shimon made his possession that belongs to Reuven, even so, Reuven doesn't have possession over the object, and that's the difference between Karka and metaltelin. Hahu odisa delavi kosuv. There was a shtar hodah. Now wait a second. What is odisa? Well, in truth, it really depends. It could be one of two things. It could be a document that was written and signed by two witnesses, or it could be a shtar that was written and signed by three individuals that make up a Beis Din. Now, in this case, what does a shtar... Okay, so let's go slowly. In the case of a shtar that's signed by two witnesses, a shtar odisa, the shtar has to indicate explicitly in the nusach hashtar that the love who's mischayev appointed the authorized these two witnesses to write the shtar, because the shtar has to be written midas hamischayev, and there was no kinyan, there was no kinyan sudar. So where do we see in the shtar? So the answer is Omar, it has to be written the following way, and this is a standard nusach in a shtar. Omar lanu, so and so told us kisvu. He consigned us to write v'chisvu, to sign a shtar v'havale, and give it over to the malva. In this case, the odisa was signed by two edim, but what was missing was the testimony that he, the love, appointed and authorized the edim to write the shtar. So there are two possibilities here. One possibility is that in fact the Lovah did not authorize the Edim to write the Shtar Odisa, in which case the Shtar Odisa is invalid. The Edim on their own initiative, without being commissioned to do so, wrote the Shtar Odisa, or alternatively, they simply forgot to include this statement in the Shtar. And we have sugyas all over the place called Toz Sofer. Like, for example, sometimes there's a Shibud Karkos in the Halva, but the Edim, when they wrote up the Shtar Halva and they gave it to the Malva, they failed to write that there's a Shibud. Or, for example, if a child inherits a piece of karka from his father who passed away. And when I say a child, I mean he's 19.99 years old. And then, after the Yerusha is divided up, he goes ahead and he sells that karka. So the Edim, they cannot write up a shtar in that case, because you need that the heir, that the Yorish be a minimum of 20 years old. He has to be very mature to understand what are the implications of selling a piece of real estate. So the Edim have to add to the shtar that they know that this seller was 20 years old. What if they left out that information? Do we assume that the Edim checked out the seller and they knew he was 20 years old? They just failed. They forgot to write it in the shtar. But the Edim really knew that they should have written it. It slipped their mind. It was an oversight. Or do we assume, no, they didn't even know and they never even checked out the guy? And if somebody later on claims that they were less than 20 years old, then the whole sale is invalid. If you want to know what happens with the Shtar Udisa, which omitted the words Ana, Omar Lona, Kismu Bechismu, Vahavale, do we assume that this was an oversight or not? Is let's derive that conclusion from Reish Lakish. The Om Reish Lakish, Chazoka in Edim Chosmin al Ashtar Elim Kenasa Godol. If two witnesses sign on a sale, a bill of sale, then we assume that they checked out the seller and they made sure, they guaranteed that he was 20 years old, that he was a Godol. And even if, says Reish Lakish, that information was omitted in the Gufo Shel Shtar, nevertheless, we assume it was a Tos, it was an oversight. So the Gemara says, in the name of Abai Varava, let's apply the principle of Reish Lakish to a Shtar Odaisa. Even if the Shtar Odaisa is missing this very critical piece of information that they, the Edom, were consigned to write the Shtar and give it over to the Malveh, nevertheless it was an oversight on their part. They certainly checked out and got the okay, the specific explicit instruction from the Moda, from the Lovah, to write the Shtar. Maskif loya, Rav Papi Vitema Rav Huna Bereda Rav Yeshua Mi Ika Midi Danan Lo Yadina Vesafri De Medina Yadinan. You're going to tell me we don't even know this halacha. In other words, not every scholar is aware of the halacha that the Moda has to go one step further and commission, explicitly designate the Edim to write such a shtar, and the Edim are not permitted to write such a shtar without such an explicit instruction, and you want to tell me the Sofrim who wrote up this shtar, they knew that that there has to be an explicit instruction. In other words, when the Edim, now it's a little bit unclear here, because until now we've been talking about witnesses. Now all of a sudden the Gemara made a sharp transition here into the mode of of judges, so I'm not sure exactly why the Gemara does so. Excuse me, at this point, the Gemara is not differentiating between Edim and Safra de Dine and the scribes that write up a document based on a verdict that was issued by a court, but the Gemara is making that equation. So again, now basically we have to know the following. When a shtar is written up, and in this case a shtar odaisa is omitted this critical information, do we assume that the Edom knew that they had to get this instruction, but they omitted it? Sha'alinu l'safre d'abaye. So we did an investigation. We went over to the sofer of Abai's court, and when we tested him, we quizzed him. And we asked him, do you realize that when you write up such a shtar odaisa, you must get permission from the Modeh? Viyade. And guess what? The Sofrim knew it. Lusafi de Rava, they went over to the sofer of Rava's court, Viyade. And the scribes knew very well that this was a requirement. And therefore we can now activate the principle of Reish Lakish, that if a scribe omits information which he knows is critical to validate the shtar, the assumption is that it was an oversight on his part. Hahio Daisa Davikosav Bey, there was a case of a shtar odaisa, it had two signatures on it. But it said, Duchrin Piskime. Okay, let me explain. This shtar was not written in the nusach of two edim, but rather it was written in the nusach of dayanim. But, and how do we know it was written in such a nusach? So there are many different indications. One of them is Duchrin Piskime. This is a record of words. So if you take a look in number 30, he says that if Edim sign a shtar, then they write a record of testimony. You know, it's Duchrin de Edus, but here they wrote Duchrin Piskime. That language of a record of words is typical of a shtar bezdin. You know, it's after bezdin issues a verdict and they write up a shtar, they open up the shtar by saying the following document is Duchrin Piskime. Okay, v'chol lishnei de beis din, and there are other languages that are written in a shtar that indicate that this is a shtar bezdin. There's only one problem. What was missing in the shtar? We need for a shtar bezdin three signatures. V'lo avikasu be b'mosav tlos ahavina, and it doesn't say on this shtar that we had a moshav, a yeshiva of three dayanim, and only two people assigned on the shtar. Did they function as witnesses or as dayanim? V'chad lesoi, and one of them is gone. Meaning, it could be that there were three dayanim at the time that the hodah took place, but one of them went. I don't know, he writes here that he died. I'm not sure if that has to be that he died, but anyway, he disappeared on us. He took a slow boat to China, and therefore we only have two signatures. So the question is, can we assume that there was a third dayan here? Now I'm going to make a leap of faith here, and I'm going to assume that it doesn't say the words that we saw earlier, Omar Lana Kismu v'chismu v'havile. Because if that be the case, then what difference does it make whether they served as witnesses or as dayanim? Is mimanaf shach, the shtar should be valid. But that again depends on the sugi of Shmuel, which we're going to get to, whether or not a bezdin, that's the sugi back on Daf Gimel, whether a bezdin can function with two judges. At this point, the Gemara is assuming, not like Shmuel, there's no such thing as a bezdin without three judges. Sovar avina lememar hainu d'reish lakish. Even though this shtar, which is definitely a shtar bezdin, because we have indications from the nusach of the shtar, clearly it's a shtar bezdin. Even though there are only two witnesses signed on the shtar, we're going to apply the principle of Reish Lakish. Certainly these dayanim understood that they needed a third dayan. They just failed. It was an oversight on their part to mention that the third dayan went to China. And therefore we can validate this shtar odaisa as a shtar bezdin. Omalei Rav Nosson Bar Ami. Hachi Amrinim Bishmei the Rav, we heard in the name of Rava. Chayshinon. Kol Kahai Gavna. Chayshinon Lebetin Toim. Rava was not willing to assume that Reish Lakish's principle should apply here. It's very, in Yiddish we would say, it's gan shayach. It's very possible that these dayanim were simply ignorant. And they thought, mistakenly, again, because we don't paskin like Shmuel, that two judges can serve as a bezdin. And that's a mistake. And therefore this shtar is totally invalid because there's no third signature. It wasn't that they knew they needed a third judge in order to form a valid bezdin, and they, in oversight, they left it out. They were under the wrong... They're working with the wrong impression. Again, Rabbo said this all fits into our discussion earlier, about 2 weeks ago when we started together, that a bezdin shel shlosha bedini mominus are not necessarily mumchim. Okay? Omer Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, ikos of beidina. Rav Nachman disagrees with Rava. And he says that if on the shtar it says the words Beidina, that this is a Bezdin, Sulotzak, we have to assume, and we can assume, that they certainly understood that they needed a third Dayan, and it was an oversight that they didn't mention that the third Dayan had gone. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, Rav Nachman, Dilma Bezdin Chatzifu, maybe the Dayanim accepted the principle of Shmuel, Shnaim Shedanu Dineim Din, Ela Shenikru Bezdin Chatzuf. Shmuel says, L'chatchila, there would be three judges, but b'dieved, if they formed a Bezdin of two, that's a valid Bezdin. And again, maybe, and this is probably Rava's agenda here, maybe Rav Nachman, you have to admit that there is a sheet of Shmuel that floats through the atmosphere. Maybe these Dayanim mistakenly accepted the sheet of Shmuel, and they thought that you can have a Bezdin with two people. The answer is, the cause of Beidina de Ravana Ashi, this was the Bezdin of Ravashi. Ravashi was the main Bezdin at that particular time. It was the chief court. It was the Supreme Court at that time. And in the Shtar Odisa, it says that this was a Shtar that was authorized by the Bezdin of Ravashi. And certainly the Bezdin of Ravashi understood that you needed three Dayan. It was an oversight that they didn't mention in the Shtar that the third Dayan, Halach Lolama. Frekti Gemara V'dilma, Rabbanan Debei Rav Ashi, Kishmuel Sfirule. How do you know for sure that Ravashi rejected Shmuel? Maybe he accepted Shmuel. And the answer is the Ksiv Bo, it says in the Shtar, Vi Amalonu Rabbana Ashi. It's not just that this was a court, you know, but Ravashi oversaw various courts, you know, there was a whole system. No. Amalonu Rabbana Ashi. Ravashi instructed us to write this note. And we know that Ravashi did not accept the sheet of Shmuel, but rather paskin that you need a bezdin of Shlosha. So this was only an oversight on their part. Tanu Rabbanu, we learned in a brisa, Omer lehem echad, anira isi avichem. So now we have a testimony of one witness. Normally the testimony of one witness is not enough in Dine Momenos. You need two witnesses. But he testifies, Ra'isi avichem, I was there and I saw your father, Shehit min mos, Beshida teva u'migdal, and he hid a certain sum of money in a closet, or in a trunk, or in a carriage, V'omar, and he declared, Shel plonihem. This is one possibility. He declared that this money belongs to so-and-so. Another possibility, Shel maisa shedihem. Right, we know that in the Shemitah cycle, on the first, second, fourth, and fifth years, you give Maaser Sheni, and we heard from your father that this money is Maaser Sheni, which means you have to take it to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim. Or Bebayis, just 1 second. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so those are the two possibilities. So the Brice establishes the following. Does the halacha give credibility to the testimony of one witness? It depends. But bias, if this witness admits that he has no access to this money, I'll explain in a minute, but rather the money is hidden somewhere in the house, right, the late father's house, which the Yorshim now have inherited this house, but the witness has no access to that money, Lo Amar Klum. He has the status of one witness, and one witness is not valid testimony. Now again, I'm not sure about the laws of Shmuel over here. Because again, the Gemara hasn't yet introduced the Baldin. The Baldin is not in the picture over here. He doesn't really have any awareness of what's going on. And in the case of Maaser Sheni, there certainly is no Baldin. It's only a question of Chovas Mitzvah. So if one witness is not believed, then it's as if nothing happened. Unless that witness has a special status. What's the special status? Basode. He has access to that money. He knows exactly where the money is hidden, where it's stashed away, and he doesn't have to break into anyone's house in order to get access to that money. It's out there in the fields. Then Dvar of Kayomim. Then the halacha accepts his testimony, which means either that the money now has to be delivered transferred over to that person, or it has to be treated as Ma'aser Sheni money. Why? And the answer is, that's called biyado. And on this, Rabosai, there's a lot of Torah. What exactly is biyado? I mean, literally, biyado means that if I know that I can take this money and do with it whatever I want, I'm believed to claim whatever I claim about this money. It's biyado. And this is a sugya at the very beginning of Bava Metzia, on Daf Beis Amud Beis. There's something called biyado. For example, if let's say I sell you a property, or whatever I sell you, and then I deny that I sold it to you. If the property is in the possession of a shlish, of a third party, it's biyado, and he has the control, that he's believed as an Eid Echad to say that this mekach belongs to so-and-so. That's called biyado. So the Gemara says, kol shel davar, kol shel biyado litlam, if this individual, who is functioning as a witness, but he has an extra credibility called biyado, it's like a migu kind of halakha, but again, there's a lot of questions, how do you define biyado? Then dvar of kayomen, then he has total credibility. But ein biyado litlam, if it's in the bayis, and he has no way of breaking into the house and getting access to these funds, lo amar klum, he's only one witness. I just want to see if he mentions anything here in the note about a shvuah. So again, the basis for his credibility is the fact that he has access to this money, and that's it. Okay, that's what we have so far.
He has access. Could he be a trustee or what?
He's like a trustee. That's called a shlish in the halacha. And a trustee is given absolute credibility by anyone to whom this money is. It's kind of like an escrow kind of thing. The money is in escrow. It's almost as if the father gave the money over to this person and said, you make sure it gets to so-and-so. And how do we know that he's not fabricating a story here? The answer is because since he has possession over the money, the chiddush in this Gemara is he didn't actually have possession of the money, but he knew where the money was located.
Could it be like a migu?
It's like a migu. That's what I said before. It's very much like a migu. If he wanted to, unbeknown to the Arshim, he could have taken that money and simply delivered it to so-and-so. Therefore, believe him when he says that your father admitted in my presence that this money belongs to so-and-so. Hareisha ro es avim shehitmin mos b'shidatevu migdal v'amr shel ploniam shel ma'aser sheni. What happens if the son, the heir himself, was there when his father hid this money in a trunk, and he said to them, "This money belongs to so and so. This money is ma'aser sheni money." So in such a case, you would say clearly, the heir has to deliver the goods. He has to live up to his father's claim. Oh, the Gemara says no. Im kim moser is dvarav kayamim, but im kim marim lo amar klum. Now, Rabosai, I'm going to just tell you what the Gemara says. Exactly how we determine this, I don't know. You really have to go through the poskim here. But the Gemara says the following: we have to look at the circumstances and ask the following question. What motivated the father to make this statement? And there's two possibilities. One is called kimoser, meaning he was instructing them. He was moser, a tzava to his children, and he was telling them explicitly, this money belongs to so-and-so. It was a very serious confession on his part. And the other possibility is that kimarim, he was deceiving them. Now, why would a person make this statement and deceive his children? And the answer is, at this point, he doesn't want them to take this money. So very often, a parent has money, which ultimately, after 120 years, will go to the child. But right now, he doesn't want the child to touch that money, for whatever reason. So what does he do? He tells the child, he fabricates a story, that this money is Ma'aser Sheni money. This money belongs to so-and-so. But he was never actually serious, and he shouldn't be taken literally to the word that he meant to say that it belongs to so-and-so, or it's Ma'aser Sheni lo amar klum, and his statement is discounted. Now, Rabosa, if you ask me how are we going to know whether he meant it as an instruction, or whether he meant it just simply to make sure that the children don't take the money, I don't know. I can't answer that question. For that, you have to go through the poskim very carefully. it's all circumstantial evidence. I don't know. You know, maybe we should bring in an expert psychologist to figure this out.
If it's why are you saying maybe, how can the father be deceiving them about this thing?
The father is looking for a method by which he will force the children, he will influence the children not to touch this money.
Happens often.
So how does he do so? He fabricates a story. He tells them, don't touch this money, it belongs to so-and-so. Don't touch this money, it's my sashini. But he never really had a seriously in mind.
Okay,
Harei Shahoya Mitztayer Almos Shehiniach Lo Aviv. In other words, the father died, the son knows that there's certain money that was left for him, and he doesn't know where to find it. So he goes to sleep. Uba bala chalom v'yomerlo, and his father or the bala chalom, the person, the angel in charge of dreams, comes and shows up to him in a dream and says, kach v'kach hein, here's the exact sum of money which your father left you. Bimakom ploni here. In the dream, he tells him exactly where to find the money. And all this turns out to be true. But you should know, Shomaisa Shani Haim. Well, or it belongs to so and so. Zehaya Maisa. This actually happened. Fiyom the Chachomim decided, Divrei Chalomos Lo Mailim Vlo Marid. He can go ahead, find the exact same money, hidden the exact same place that he was notified in the dream, and it could be even his father told him in the dream. And he doesn't have to give it to anybody. He doesn't have to give it to Meister Shani. Why? Because every dream has what's called Dvarim B'Teilim. This has to do with Yosef and his brothers, if you remember. And although 99% of the dream was accurate and was true, that should certainly prove to us that this was a real Baal HaChalom. But nevertheless, this is not considered halachic evidence to undermine a person's possession over monies, a muzakus in dine mominus. And on 8 o'clock a.m., about half a year ago, I gave a whole shiur on this line in the Gemara, in my pre-shachris shiur, what's the status of dreams? But the bottom line is that as far as dine mominus is concerned, to undermine a chazak of mammon, there is no credibility to a dream. And I would go even a step further here, I'm not a psychologist. And I certainly am not a Freudian psychologist, but you know that Freud wrote a lot about dreams. That it could very well be that this son had certain, he had certain guilt feelings about the monies, for whatever reason. So he convinced himself in the dream, his subconscious mind, that his father told him that that money doesn't belong to him. In any event, it's not valid testimony or evidence. It has no weight in a court of law. Okay, now we go back to the Mishnah.
In this case, it's not a court of law. It is morality. Correct.
Even on a moral level, he has no responsibility. He can feel ruyuk. He can feel absolutely calm and comfortable about taking the money and buying a piece of property here in Katamon. Okay.
Yeah, but in a lot of cases, Rabbi, parents are very scared. They're very, very wealthy and they're scared the children aren't going to do anything with their lives. So they don't want them to know that this money exists.
Right.
So they put it into into a fund or
trust. In all this. Okay, Rabbi Osai, what should be written by Beis Din when the final decision is issued? So the Mishnah says that if you have a Beis Din of three, Shnayim Omrim Zakai, two out of three say that the Lova doesn't have to pay, then they shouldn't mention. And no one is allowed to reveal, you know, who said what amongst the judges. So, michtav heichik sivi. So, what exactly should be written in the shtar of Beis Din after the verdict is handed down? Rabbi Yochanan Omar, zakai. All that should be written is that so-and-so is off the hook. He doesn't have to pay money. Reish Lakish Omar, no. What has to be written is ploni uploni mizakim, ploni uploni mechayvin. The names of the judges who accepted one position or the dissenting position have to be written in the shtar. Why is that so? Rabbi Eliezer Omar, midivreyem nizdake ploni. Okay, so we're going to understand Rabbi Elazar in just a minute. He's going to be the pshara here, the compromise sheet between the two extreme positions of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And all that's mentioned here is that the judges came to the conclusion that so-and-so is off the hook. My Beinai, what exactly are they arguing about? What is the yesod of this machlokes? Ike Beinai. L'shlome ihu minasa behadai. What happens if the case was misjudged? And the halacha is that if, under certain circumstances, for that we have to learn sugyas, the dayanim have to pay out of pocket if they are held responsible, or shall we say, what's the word, pshia in English? They were negligent. If they were negligent in the way they judged, meaning they should have done more research on the law, etc., etc., then they have to pay damages. Now, if they have to pay damages, well, one of the judges, at least, should have the right to say, I was the dissenting opinion, and I don't want to pay damages. Oh. Lamanti Omar Zakai. If you hold like Rabbi Yochanan that all the shtar has to say is that so and so is not liable, and the name of the dissenting judge is not mentioned, then it means mishalim. What does that mean, mishalim? So Rabbi said this is a very, very profound halacha, very difficult to understand. It's deep beyond my comprehension, but the Gemara wants to suggest that even the dissenting view is liable. Why? Because the Beis Din could not exist without him. He made up this Beis Din. As if to say that if he really was so emphatic about it, he should have just picked up and left and say, I don't want to be part of this Beis Din. Again, it has to be studied very carefully. But in any event, the Gemara is saying, Mishalim, that even the dissenting judge has to pay, let's say, one third of the damages here to compensate the Lova, or the Malva in this case, who lost the money. Lamandi Omar, Ploni, Ploni, Mizak, and Ploni, Ploni, Mechai. But what does Reish Lakish hold? Why do the names of the dissenting judges have to be mentioned explicitly in the Shtar? Lo Mishalim, because the dissenting judge is exonerated from any responsibility to compensate in a case where the verdict was a misjudgment. And therefore he wants to write his name in the Shtar, to go on record that I dissented because I think that they made a big mistake, the other judges, with all due respect. And that overrides any sort of rechilus over here, in which he's telling the Bali Dinim that these guys over here, by name, were the ones who caused you a loss. So the Gemara says this is impossible. This understanding of Rabbi Yochanan is way too profound for us to accept. It's deep beyond human comprehension. Ulamadi Omar Zakai Mishalim. You're telling me that even the one who dissents, he also has to shell out of pocket in order to compensate the loss. Lemaluhu, let him say to the others, Ilididhu, Ilididitai Sisun, if you were to listen to me, Asun Nami Lol Shalmisun, you also wouldn't have had to pay. Why am I responsible? In other words, the Gemara is denying this. You saw that he should have picked himself up and left. He has a right to remain on the Beis Din and dissent, and he wants his name recorded because he doesn't want to pay for any loss. So we have to come up now with a different explanation, and even Rabbi Yochanan would admit that the dissenting Dayan does not have to pay damages if they made a misjudgment. Ela ikar beinayu lishlume inu minasa didei. The question here is, when two judges made a mistake, two out of the three, do they have to pay each one a third? Just one second, did I get the fractions right here? In other words, do they have to pay for the third judge, which would mean two-thirds? No, that doesn't make any sense. Half, oh yeah, half, right. Would they have to pay half? L'madi Omer Zakai Mishalmei. According to the Ma'adi Yomar, who says, Rabbi Yochanan, that all the shtaris to say is what? Is Zakai, then so-and-so is not liable. None of the names of the judges appear in the shtar. He holds Mishalmi, they have to pay even for the third judge. Well, Ma'adi Yomar, Ploni, Ploni, Mizak, and Ploni, Ploni, according to Rabbi Yochanan, why do they have a right to insist? Why does the dissenting judge have a right to say that and his name has to be found, lo mishalme, because they don't have to share the burden of his share. Just 1 second. Okay. So Rashi is helpful here, but there's still a bit of a question left. Rashi says that if the halacha is lo mishalmi, then there has to be some indication in the shtar that there was a dissenting view. Why? Because then the mistaken judges have a right to claim. We don't have to compensate him for the entire loss. Meaning he, the lova in this case, or the malva, whoever it is, has to share in this loss. Again, I'm not sure why the names of the judges have to be maintained at this point. Well, maybe the Gemara is going to ask that question. I forgot. Ulamandi Omer Zakoi Mishalmi. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the two judges have to pay even for the third judge, for that third share. Lemrule, they have a right to say to the dissenting judge, Ilav At Bahadon Lo Avi Solik Dina Midi. We needed you as the third judge because the function of Bezdin requires three judges. So you yourself, in a certain sense, have contributed to the loss of the Baldin. Why should we have to pay your chelek? So therefore the Gemara concludes that even Rabbi Yochanan agrees that the two witnesses would not have to pay and share the burden of the third judge. So we have to come up with another explanation for Rabbi Yochanan. Ela ikabinai, what's the machlokes? Rabbi Yochanan insists, Mishum lo selech rachil be'amecha. The Torah says that you're not allowed to tell stories that could cause enmity and resentment. Is Rabbi Yochanan Amar Zakai? All you have to write in the shtar is Zakai. Because if you go beyond that and you mention the names of the Eidim Mishum, you violate Lo Selech Rachel. This is damaging to the witnesses, to the judges who judged against somebody. The litigant doesn't have to be aware of which judges came to which conclusion. Reish Lakish Omar, Ploni Uploni Mezak, and Ploni Uploni Mechayvin. Rabbi Reish Lakish says there's a more overriding factor over here that negates and neutralizes Rechilu. So what's that? Mishum the Mechse Kishikra. The Torah says, Midvar Sheker Tirchok. And if you write in the Shtar Zakoi, as Rabbi Yochanan insists, that looks like it was an unanimous opinion. Rabbi Lozar says, I have a compromise between the two Shitas. Islay Lamar, the Islay Lamar. I agree that both arguments are correct. Rabbi Yochanan is waving the flag of the Isra Rechilus. Reish Lakish is waving the flag of Midvar Sheker Tirchok. Hilkoch, I have a solution. Kasviyoch, let's write the following. Midivreyem Nizdake Ploni. In other words, through the decision of so-and-so, they were found not liable. Now, why does this language serve to satisfy both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish? The verdict was not arrived at unanimously. That's clear, because he says, Mi divrehem. It wasn't a unanimous decision, so there's no sheker in the shtar. That satisfies Reish Lakish. But on the other hand, the names of who held what amongst the judges are concealed, and therefore there's no rechilus, and that satisfies Rabbi Yochanan. Gomel esad dover hayu machnisim. When they,
but we don't know now in the case of the judges how they pay out, who pays what. The Gemara never answered. You just said there were various possibilities.
Right. It seems that the Gemara's final conclusion is that certainly the dissenting judge does not have to contribute to the loss. And as far as whether or not the two other judges who made the mistake, they have to cover the you know, the third judge, it seems like they certainly do not have to do that, because
but just by third and the person,
correct, one third, and the Baldin himself will have to suffer the loss of the third. Now the Mishnah tells us that when the verdict is issued, then machnisim, they bring him in. So the Gemara says, Laman, who are they bringing in? Ilei melabalei dinim. Are you telling me that the litigants are not there? Meaning we kicked them out during the entire deliberation period. Hasam kaimi. Who says? It doesn't say in the Mishnah that we have to tell the balei dinim to leave while the deliberations are going on. Eli edim. But it means that we don't want the edim to be there, and now we have to introduce them again. Why do we have to introduce the edim again? Now this is fascinating. Because on the first round, each aide was interrogated first. Each aide submitted his testimony individually. Correct? Because that was the way that we were able to compare the two testimonies. That's not a valid aide. We need both aide to testify together. And in order to do that, we have to introduce the aide a second time. And that's what the Gemara means here, that the aide now have to reiterate their testimony, and now it becomes a formal and a binding valid testimony. Kiman, who is that? The Loki Rabbi Nassan. Rabbi Nassan is of the opinion that you can accept the testimony of one aide in monetary cases and of another aide in monetary cases separately. The Sanya we learned in Ebraisa. And we're going to now study the first part of the Ebraisa and the second part of the Ebraisa. The first part of the Braisa is going to record a machlokus between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. This is a much more far-reaching machlokus. Both witnesses have to testify that they saw the same single event. I'll explain. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha omer no. Afilu bazech arzeh. Imagine. One of the two witnesses testified that on such and such a day we saw Shimon borrow money from Reuven. Another aide testifies that on a different day we saw the same sum of money borrowed from Shimon, borrowed by Shimon from Reuven, and we can be mitzarif the two aides. Again, the Gemara is going to analyze the logic of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, ben Karcha, excuse me. Now we have the Sefer the Braisa. This is immediately relevant to us, but we're going to go back to the Reisha as well. The Eidei Dusam is Kayemis Bebezdin, according to the Tanakhama, Achia Idush Neim Kecha, the two witnesses have to testify at the same exact time, which is called Tokedei Dibur. Rabbi Nassan, Omer disagrees, Shomim Dvar Shel Zayo, Shiova Chaver Lemacha, Shomim Es Dvar Shel Ze. Each one can testify at a different day, and Bezdin will combine the two testimonies. Therefore, if you're telling me that we have to reintroduce the Adam to repeat their testimony, if that's what the Mishnah is saying, then it's against Rabbi Nassan. Because you're telling me that we have to reinvite the Adam to testify a second time, so the two testimonies of each aid respectively are simultaneous. That's against Rabbi Nassan, because Rabbi Nassan says, Yoed Hayom, Harishon Yoed Hayom, Vasheni Lamachar, Shom Dvaris Ezevim. Lo, Sigma says no. That's not the pshat in our Mishnah. Olam lebalei dinim. Actually, the litigants have to be brought in. For Rav Nechemyah, because this Mishnah reflects the shita in a brisa of Rav Nechemyah, the sanya Rav Nechemyah Omer, kach hayom in hagam shel nekiyei hadas shebi Yerushalayim. This was the tradition, the custom in the high moral Yerushalayim courts. That machnisin lebali dinim v'shomim divrehem. First, we invite the litigants to each one present his claim in front of Bezdin. Then, number two, in the second stage, machnisin esaedim v'shomim divrehem, we listen to the testimony of the edim. And at that point, for the deliberations, motzian osan lachutz, and now we remove them from the court. That's what I don't know. I'm not sure. It definitely means that we have to remove the litigants from the court. I'm not sure if we have to remove the Adam from the court, because again, we're holding now like Rabbi Nassan, that the Adam have already testified. And Kevin Shehigan, Shuvan, Echolz, and Magad, the Adam have no recourse to in any way change their testimony. The testimony is final. So I don't know if we have to remove the Edom from the court. But Vinosim Midabit, the deliberations should take place in the absence of the Bali Dinim. And then Gomor Sadavar Machnisin Osam. Only at the end we introduce them. Now, I'm not exactly sure why we have to get rid of the Edom in the Nikiyei Hadas Yerushalayim during the deliberations. I have three different possible explanations. I did not get a chance to research this in the Mefarshim. Maybe you'll take a look and see if he says anything there in the footnotes. Number one, it could be that the Dayanim themselves will be inhibited by the presence of the litigants. Number two, it could be that the litigants will interfere in the process, actively start yelling and screaming and so forth. And that won't allow the judges to be absolutely clear and objective about their deliberations. Number three, it's possible, based on the Gemara of Rabbi Yochanan before, of Rechilus, that, again, we don't want the litigants to know which of the judges is inclined towards which opinion. But in any event, the Nikiyei Hadas Yerushalayim got rid of the litigants and brought it back in only when the verdict was formulated. For Tanya, the Gemara says, I don't understand. We have a Bryce that says, Gomer Sadovar Machnisim Es Ha'edim. Hahu. Oh, so we have a Bryce that clearly indicates that the Edim have to come back a second time. Hahi Delok Rab Nosson. That reflects the Sheet of the Chachamim of Rab Nosson, that we need two witnesses to testify. Tochide Dibur. The Haggadah requires a Tziruf Maisa Haggadah, and therefore they have to reiterate their Eidus a second time. But we paskin like Rabbi Nosson, I think. That's going to be the next sugya. Do we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan? Gufo, let's go back to this Brisa. Let's start with the Resha, the Brisa Lolanani, do some mitzvahs going to Chachamim. You can't testify two different witnesses, combine them, when they're testifying on two different Maisim that happened on two different days. They both have to see the same thing at the same time. Again, in Dini Nefashos, everybody agrees to this position. It's unbelievable. The Mishnah says in Makkos, if the two Edim saw the same murder from two different windows, two different vantage points, you can't combine them into one cut. They actually stand next to each other and see the murder at the same time. But in Dini Mominus, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha says, Afilu bazachar zeh. They can testify on two different actions. The mycomifically, what are they arguing about? Ebois e makra, ebois ema svara. And I was very excited that the Gemara starts with the svara, because the svara is very powerful. Ebois ema svara, what are they arguing about? Amona de kamasid hai, lo kamasid hai. The Chachamim say that each one is testifying on a different sum of money. Right, the sum of money of Sunday's occurrence is not the sum of money. Again, it might be the same exact money in dollars and cents, but they're two different meisim, they're two different actions or procedures. Money the commissari, high low commissari. So how can you put together two witnesses? In fact, it goes so far that Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha says that one witness is testifying on a loan, and the other witness is testifying on an admission, on confession, or the other testimony, the second witness is testifying on a hezek, on damages. How are you going to put together two witnesses that are telling two different stories? The idach. So what does Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha say? Amona bi alma travayu kamisade. They're not being made on the sipur dvarim, on the story, they're being made on the sum of money. And on that sum of money, they both agree, pe'echad, that this person owes the exact sum of money to the other person. Why he owes the money? That's secondary. The testimony is not the Sipur Dvarim, as it is in Dini Nefashos, but in Dini Mamonos, it's on the Mamon that the testimony. And we don't have to be Mitzarif, the two of them, because they're both testifying on the same Mamon. Two different stories, two different Machayvim, but it's the same Mamon.
Can I just say they borrowed it twice, on two separate occasions, 100, but now he's saying that he's going to pay back one of the 100.
I'm going a step further than that, Doc. I'm saying not only is the two different loans, both of which is 100, but it could be two different meisim. One was a loan, one was a hezek, one was a cow that he was negligent and he didn't watch the cow properly, and he has to pay me din achray shomer. It doesn't matter, as long as the bottom line is that Reuven owes Shimon 100, and both Edom are testifying to that effect. Amana kamasade, they're testifying on the 100. Same across. Another possibility is that they're arguing about a pasuk. Now this pasuk is in the parasha of Shavuos Eidus at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. It says the Chassid, for who aid O Ra O Yada, and there's some extra words over here. It says that this witness either saw it or he knew about it. Visanya, we learned in the Braisa, Mimashva Shenemar Lo Yakum Eid is Eni Odea Shehu Echad. Ma Talmud Lomer Echad is an extra word in this pasuk. It says Vehu Eid. It should have said Vehu Ra O Yada. Ma Talmud Lomer Echad. What do you mean? Why did it say Vehu Eid O Ra? Just 1 second. Any of the issue Echad. Ma Talmud Lomer Echad. Oh, I guess the Gemara is assuming that when it says who ate, it means who ate echad. So what is he telling me? That it's an aid echad? Why do I have to know that? I know already that he's an aid echad. Even if you would have omitted the word v'hu aid, is zebinyan av kol makom shenemar aid. He wants to teach me something about the entire Torah. Harekan shnayim. So the Torah wants to tell me that as a general rule, when it says aid, it means what? It means two witnesses. And how do I know this? Because here the Torah went out of its way to say aid, that it was only one. Okay, I just want to see if I can at least get to the end of the sugya. The Afke Rachmana Baloshan Chad. Why does the Torah use the term aid in the singular when it refers to Shnayim? Because we have this rule, Kol Makom Shenemar Aid, it means Shnayim. So why did the Torah confuse us by saying aid in the singular? The answer is Adchazu Travayu Kichad. This is telling us that the Re'ias Eidim, according to the Tanakam of Rabbi Shimon ben Koruch, has to be Kichad, like one witness, meaning they saw it together. The Idach. What does Rabbi Shimon ben Koruch do with this pasuk? V'hu eid o ra'a o yada. And this pasuk has a hekesh between re'iyah and yediyah. Mikol makom. To tell me that it doesn't have to be that they both saw it together, but rather this one was Ra, and this one was Yada. This one saw this, and this one saw that, and we can put them all together. That's called Mikol Makom, in any event. Now we get to the Sefer Vein, Eidus HaMiskayemes BeBezdin Ad, Shiyaidu Shneim Ke'echad. According to Tanakama, they have to testify, Tokedei Dibur, Rav Nosson Omer, Shomim Dvar Shel Zayom, K'shiyo V'chaver L'mochar, Shomim Dvarav, V'maiko Mifgei Ibai Seim Esvar, Ibai Seim Ekra. I can explain it to you, logically I can explain it to you based on Pesuk of Ibai Seim Esvar. Mar Sover, according to the Tanakama, Eid Echad Ki Asi L'shvu Asi. There's no way that you can combine the testimony of one aid with the testimony of another aid, because each aid is testifying only on a Chiyuv Shvua. And he's not testifying on Mammon. Meaning, Chachom understand that when an aid comes in to testify, he's testifying only on a Chiyuv Shvua, but Lamona Kasi, he's not coming to testify on money. How can you put them together? Unless they came together to testify Tokedei Dibur, then they're testifying on Mammon, the Idach. And Rabbi Nosson laughs at this. What kind of svar is that? Atu kiyosi bahadi adodi b'chad puma komasadi. Even when they came together, they still have to testify one after the other. And each one you're going to say is testifying on a shvua. Ella, but you must admit, mitzarfin lahu, that we have to add them and combine them together. If we're combining them together, then let them come on one day, one aid on one day, and the other aid on another day. Sochinami litzarfinu. Yiboy say makra, or should we say that they're arguing a pasuk? Imlo yagid v'nasa avono. And now we turn to daf lamed amid beis, and we'll have to finish up in a minute for davening. With the Kuli Alma, everybody agrees. Be Rabbanon, the Pligi Aleid Rabbi Yoshi, where are we? I think I skipped something. Did I skip something? Sorry. Ude Kuli Alma Kira Bonon De Pligi Aleid Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha. Everybody agrees to the Rabbanon that they both have to testify in the same event. So as far as the Haggadah is concerned, we need, as far as the Re'iyah is concerned, we need a Tziruf in the Re'iyah. They both observed and witnessed the same event. But what about Haggadah? Can they at least testify on the same event? Bazech, is there one coming in Sunday and the other coming in Monday? One coming in Monday, the other coming in Thursday? Hacha bekushe Haggadah l'Re'iyah kamifligi. The machlokus is, do we have a hekesh between Re'iyah and Haggadah? Marsover makishon, we compare Haggadah to Re'iyah. Just like in the case of Re'iyah, they have to see the same thing together, and we need Tziruf Kat b'Re'iyah. So too in Haggadah, by virtue of this equation, and now we need Tziruf in the Haggadah. That's the sheet of the Chachamim. Marsover Rav Nosson says what? Lo makishin, and he never accepted that equation. So therefore, even if I accept the shita of the Chachamim against Rabbi Yishuv and Karcha, namely that you need Tziruf Re'iyah, and they both have to see the same event, but nevertheless in Haggadah, we have the flexibility of accepting the testimony of one aid today, and the testimony of the other aid tomorrow. He doesn't accept the hekesh between Re'iyah and Haggadah. Okay, we'll stop here.